and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I am Cy Kellett, and this week we ask whether you are all in on your Catholic faith. Are you convinced, or is some part of you holding back from surrendering? Our guest this week is Pat Gohn, and she is, well, a longtime writer, retreat leader, conference speaker, and all that, well known for her book, Blessed, Beautiful, and Bodacious. She's also the host of the Among Women podcast and the editor of Catechist magazine. Gohn lives in North Andover, Massachusetts, and her latest book is All In, Why Belonging to the Catholic Church Matters. Pat Gohn, thanks so much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure, Cy. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, let me ask you this. So at some point, I guess, in our life, we get the choice, or maybe it's many, I suppose in many lives, it's many times, before we finally kind of, okay, I'm all in now. So when did that happen for you, or how did you become a person who is all in on her Catholic faith?
Great question, Cy. And you know, what I love about being Catholic is that we really believe in ongoing conversion.
Amen,
I think I
right.
had many steps of saying yes to the Lord in a deeper and deeper way as I've gone along in my life. But one of the things that I kind of talk about in terms of like one of those really early breakthroughs in my Christian life was in my teen years when I encountered joyful Catholics. Catholics who were helping to run a youth ministry retreat program in my parish, and they were on fire for Christ in a way that I hadn't really experienced before. I was a cradle Catholic. I was raised in a Catholic family and had the beautiful privilege of going to Catholic schools as a child. So I learned about my faith, in that kind of rote knowledge, book knowledge kind of way, learning about God, learning about the Catholic Church, learning my prayers as a child. So I had that beautiful foundation, and I was grateful for that. But in terms of owning my faith, if you will, on my own, I was confirmed when I was around 13 years old, around the sixth grade. And I want to say in the years that followed that, between like, well, I guess maybe I was a little younger than 13. Now I'm thinking about it. You know, you're probably more 11 or 12 in the sixth grade. But in those early teen years, you know, between 14, 16, I met these adults who were just on fire for their faith. And you know what? It was an shattering kind of thing. You know, the love of Jesus that came from their own witness to me and their love for me and the way they loved young adults and loved teens was really infectious. It was attractive. And I've heard Pope Francis talk about when you love someone, you want to tell everybody about your beloved. And that was exactly my experience, you know, on the receiving end of the love of these adults who are running this youth ministry. And so I had a chance to kind of accept Jesus, you know, in a personal way in those years, and to begin this journey, you know, with Jesus, you know, as my divine friend, if you will. And the things about the church started to make sense, like once that relationship started to blossom.
And I note that you connected with the sacrament of confirmation, and the book All In is quite significantly a sacramental kind of treatise. It's really encouraging us to live the sacramental side of the Catholic faith, or the sacramental nature of the Catholic faith. So how long did you know then that your confirmation was kind of the beginning of being able to receive what these adults were offering you and all that kind of thing? Or was it upon later reflection that you came to see the sacramental connection to your being fired up in the life of the church?
You know, I think it was a little bit of both of what you described. I think in the moment, I think as I started to have this experience of being on retreat and understanding that, like, you know, Jesus could really talk to me through the scriptures and things like that, I started to kind of develop like a stronger prayer life where I wanted to be with the Lord, if you will, uh-huh. and wanted to walk with him in a way that was deliberate outside of just beyond Sundays, if you will, just going to Mass on Sunday. And certainly I'm not belittling just going to Mass. I
right.
You know, that's, you know, the high point of the week too. But as a young adult, I did not see the connection beyond Sunday into this daily living, breathing relationship, you know, ongoing day to day. So for me, it was a bit later as a young adult that I realized that, isn't this interesting that the Lord kind of poured out these graces that followed my confirmation, that kind of woke me up in a way. Plus, I had the benefit of this church community that provided a place to be living out the faith in. And I'm ever so grateful to the people who reached out to me in those years. Just that person-to-person connection, so vitally important in my ongoing conversion.
I wonder if you have any view, like lots of people in my generation, I'm 53, so my catechesis is late 60s and through the 70s, and it was uneven to say to give it the best spin. However, I did on occasion have wonderful catechesis that I can remember, but also really kind of lost catechesis, so a kind of drifting catechesis. Did you experience any of that? And do you kind of agree with the thesis that many people were poorly catechized in those years?
Yes, I would say that I have met a lot of poorly catechized people from particular generations. And I would say that catechesis, if you will, you know, this idea of really learning about the faith, you know, learning more deeply about prayer and everything else, is almost has a better chance of really shaping a person's life and bringing about this transformation in Christ once the evangelization has taken place. So if I wanted to use those two words, you know, evangelization and catechesis, I would say I was a little bit catechized before my confirmation. After my confirmation, I was strongly evangelized. And then later, because of that, catechesis began to make sense. And actually, personally, I began to hunger for it. The first thing I hungered for was like knowledge of the scriptures, you know, learning the Bible, praying with the Bible, wanting to know more about God's word. And then in time, developed a more love for the sacraments, because as you go deeper in prayer, you know, you want to grow in deeper intimacy with Jesus. And of course, we have beautiful intimacy in and through the gift of the sacraments, especially the Eucharist.
So you start the book talking about the Beloved, and I guess I'm getting a picture here that it's that encounter with the Beloved that is key for you in your own development as a Catholic person. And that's the evangelizing moment, I suppose, is the way you could think about it. That's the moment where you are evangelized. You meet this Beloved. And so then the catechesis is natural following that because it proceeds from wanting to know the Beloved and everything about the Beloved. Am I getting that picture correctly?
Yeah, I think that you are right on. It's a very accurate portrayal of what has played out in my own life, you know, and especially decades later, you know, since my teen years when that first flame was lit, if you will. And I think the beautiful thing is that while, yes, you know, we point to the sacraments as these powerful moments of grace, you know,
right,
in your life, in my life, again, the role of the Christian community was profound for me. It became like a larger family for me, you know, the family of God. I realized I was baptized into the family of God, that these people were my sisters and brothers. The social connections shifted to understand that I was part of this larger body. And that's really what the book All In is about. The subtitle for All In is Why Belonging to the Catholic Church Matters. And I get to have conversations about this with a lot of people because for the last 20 plus years I've been living in the Archdiocese of Boston. And many people who know the recent history of Boston in the last 20 years know that we've suffered, you know, one of the most difficult church scandals and the most prolonged in terms of the way the media played it out. And there's been a lot of hurt and a lot of confusion up in this region as a result. So back in the day, you know, before the first articles broke open, the stories in the Boston Globe, I was working on a church staff at the time, a very large church up here in North Andover. And I saw firsthand, you know, the devastation that took place, you know, in this local parish, you know,
right.
people being confused, people leaving, people not wanting to be associated with the church anymore, you know, the local church, the global church. There were all these different things that were happening. And I had to begin to dig deep on my own part for why do I belong? What's, you know, what holds me here? I never left the church in the aftermath of the scandal, but it was a difficult, painful time, and a lot of us, you know, suffered in many ways, not the least of which the victims, of course,
right.
of the scandal.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know, having to come up with those types of conversations, you know, on a regular basis over the last number of years, that's kind of what this book is, and that's why it kind of has a personal nature to it,
yes.
because I tell some stories about, you know, my own struggles and my own life coming to the conclusions of why I'm a confident Catholic, why I feel the church is worthy of our trust, and the different areas of the church that we can put our confidence in.
Well, you use the image of the bride and the bridegroom to a great effect in the book, and if Christ is our bridegroom, I think there's even a sentence where you virtually say this. I'll have to paraphrase it, but if he's the bridegroom, then I'm all in. I mean, that's kind of the so. But you describe the bride as mud splattered. I think that's the word. Am I right?
Mud splattered. Yeah.
So tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, if I could just briefly summarize what you were just saying. Yes, I do teach with this imagery that the church herself teaches with and that Jesus himself uses, you know, the identifying as the bridegroom and the church as the bride. St. Paul in Ephesians talks about that to create great effect. So, you know, it's not just a metaphor or a nice image that I came up with. This is what the church teaches about herself as well. But, you know, as I was talking earlier about those relationships I had, developing a relationship with Jesus, developing a relationship with the members of the body of Christ in the church, we have a faith here in Christianity that's really rooted in relationship. And you can't get, you know, a stronger relationship than talking about bride and bridegroom. So I talk about some of my experiences, and especially the negative experiences and the negative lens through which some people look at the church today. And in many ways, you know, when we want to think of a bride, we want to think of, you know, the radiant bride, you know, beautifully dressed. You know, it's a very splendorous moment. In fact, in my own life, I just watched my son and, you know, daughter-in-law just get married like 2 weeks ago. It was a beautiful, holy moment, you know, the moment of their marriage and exchanging vows. And the beauty of the bride in that moment, it's everything, you know, we want it to be in,
right.
in our minds. And yet, I think because of some of the problems that the church has had, I think sometimes we don't see her as bride. We see her kind of as a mud splash bride. You don't want to see a bride that's, you know, got mud all over her dress or, you know, the tears or something that's less than radiant. But I think a lot of times we look at the church through our own hurts with the church, through our own woundedness, and we see this mud splash bride. So in the book, I talk about Jesus as bridegroom, us as the bride, and I say, you know, Jesus is wedded to the bride, and there's never going to be a divorce, ever. You know, this is the bridegroom that we place our trust in. And then I go on to talk about what is this mud splash bride, and I talk about the humanity and divinity of Christ, and then I talk about the humanity and the divinity of the church. And how they are wedded together, and that's really the crux of the teaching of the humanity and the divinity of the church. A lot of people understand the humanity of the church, and they're not very inspired by it, because the church has, you know, fallen down and broken down, and
right,
there's been
right.
scandals, and there's been really negative things in our history, and we can't gloss that over. And I'm certainly not condoning any of some of the negative and tragic things that have happened in church history. But we also have to understand the divine part of the church and what that is and why this this weddedness between Jesus Christ and the church is so central to our understanding. And I think that is part of that catechesis that's been missing in a lot of people's lives.
Yep.
They do not understand this the divinity side of the church. There's a quote I put in the book from Pope Benedict that really kind of nails this down for me. He talks about that we have two feelings with regard to the church. He gave an interview in 2010 about the difficulties the church has had, and Benedict was really marveling at the fidelity, especially of Jesus Christ, to the church, despite the countless infidelities of the members of the church, if you can get that picture.
Yep.
And this is the quote. If you don't mind, I'll just give it to you in the Pope's words. He said, "I believe these two feelings belong together. The deep shock over the wretchedness, the sinfulness of the church, and the deep shock over the fact that Jesus Christ doesn't drop this instrument, but that he works with it, that he never ceases to show himself through and in the church." Unquote.
It's an extraordinary quote. It takes us out of that position of, the church is such a mess, I can't be part of that. It gives us more, the church is such a mess, I need to be part of that because Christ has been ever faithful to it. I think it gets at what I kind of took away as the heart of the book, which is having a sense of confidence in the church. Be confident in the power of the sacraments, in the love of Christ that is manifest in the church. Would you say that's, if you wanted somebody to take something away from the book, am I right that it's be confident? This is genuinely a divine thing, and it genuinely will make all the difference.
Absolutely. And thank you for that. That's a compliment that you got the message of the book. I appreciate that. But what Benedict is saying about the church is equally important, and I think Francis says this as well in his ways of showing us through his actions, that Jesus is still part of this church. Jesus is still wedded to this church. And he is still raising up saints in the church. He is still using the church to transform others because of the graces that flow through the church and things like that. So yes, the nine chapters I wrote are the nine toeholds or footholds or anchors that I see that are worthy of our confidence and our trust in the church. And I did write about belonging. And that's why I start the book talking about belonging to the church, because, you know, this sense of belovedness of who we are, not only knowing Jesus the Beloved, but how beloved we are, I think is kind of where we need to start to have the questions answered in terms of the confidence we have in the church. First, understanding the depths of God's love for us, that we are beloved. And we are called to kind of image the Beloved. You know, I can just think in very human terms, if I can just tell you this little story, about my own Beloved, who is my husband, Bob. We're getting ready to celebrate our 35th wedding anniversary in a few weeks. So we've been around each other for a long time. But I am married to a car guy, you know? Do you know what I mean when a car guy? Like some guys are just, some guys are football guys and sports guys, or, some guys love to, do certain things with their spare time. My guy is a car guy. He has been restoring MGs, MGBs. The MG brand is not even made anymore, These are old-fashioned British vintage cars.
Uh-huh.
And Bob loves these little cars. In the course of our 35-year marriage, we've had five different MGs that Bob has basically resurrected from the dead each time, taken a broken down MG and with a lot of love and care and elbow grease, just fixed it up. And over time, I've gotten to know Bob better in our life together, but I've also gotten to know his hobby kind of from the inside out. Everything from handing him greasy tools when he's working in the garage to helping to push start the thing out of the driveway to going to car shows with him and things like that. It's just a fun hobby. But because he's my beloved, because he's the one I love, I want to learn to love the things that Bob loves. And this is one of the things that, you know, that gives him a kick, that he really loves. So I've changed over time to just being somebody who's watched him, you know, with his car love, to kind of entering into the love of my love, you know? I've learned to love the things that my love loves. Does this make sense to you?
It makes very, very good sense to me. And it, but it gets, go ahead.
I was just going to say, just to kind of tie a bow around it, you know, if I love Jesus, I want to love the things that Jesus loves. I want to love what my love loves. So Jesus loves the church. So there's a call on my own heart to develop a greater love for the church, to understand the church better, and to love my fellow brothers and sisters in the church even more, with even greater devotion in time.
Right.
Warts and all, you know, problems and all. Just like a family, you know.
Exactly.
We have, you know, warts and all, we're called to lay our lives down for one another. So that's part of the message of the book too.
Indeed, and it comes back. It always begins, and it always begins with that idea of the loving other. That with it, none of this book would make any sense. And as a matter of fact, just the idea of being all in for the Catholic Church makes any sense without that falling in love with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So you break it down for us then. After, I mean, I do think this is such a big confidence booster, this book, and I hope people will pick it up. But you know what? Before I get on to what I was about to ask you then, let me ask you this, because it does seem that one of the things that I'm sure you run into this all the time in your work. In Catholic media, we run into it all the time. My children have left the church. My adult children are not connected to the faith anymore. Did you have these folks in mind when you wrote this book at all?
The people I really had in mind were people who, it could include those people that you mentioned, but kind of people who were not particularly all in. You know, people who might feel a little estrangement from the church, people whose relationship with the church might have been a little wobbly or disconnected. Those kinds of people. I was thinking really of here in my own milieu in the Boston area, where people have kind of walked away shaking their head saying, what good is this? Why stay? And so, yeah, you know, and we all have different, you know, we're all on different parts of the journey of the Catholic and Christian life. This is why I was talking about the beauty of being a Catholic means, you know, we're really called to this ongoing conversion, you know, a series of conversion moments, right, and then living it out, you know, to the best of our ability and going deeper with the Lord over time. You know, sometimes there are setbacks in our conversion, and yet when people are won back to the love of Christ, sometimes they come back even stronger. So that's my hope, and that's the hope I would say to anybody who's out there thinking that, you know, well, maybe my children have walked away or whatever. I would love them radically with the love of Jesus as best as you can, you know, unconditionally love them and continue to pray for them and pray for their guardian angel and pray for other people to help, you know, inspire them and start to look for the seeds of the good in the lives that they're living and point them out to them as gifts of the Father. You know, there's so many different ways we can have conversations,
right,
without saying, you must come back to church with me this Sunday. I mean, you can always invite. I'm a big one for inviting. You know, people come over to visit and say, well, I'd love you to come over to visit on Sunday. You're welcome to join us for Mass at, you know, 11 o'clock.
Right.
And then, you know, we'll go out afterwards. But always look for the seeds of the good, seeds of what the God thing is in what they're doing. You know, they might be very committed to a particular, you know, aspect of their work or whatever. Try to always point out the good so that you always maintain the relationship with your child in some way. You know, don't give up the relationship. You know, where the relationship is still alive, there's still hope to be able to communicate your love for Christ in a myriad of ways and your love for Catholicism by living it large, you know, yourself.
And that part of that living, I notice as the book progresses, we're moving outward. The trajectory is out of ourselves towards other people. And the last chapter's love of neighbor is one of them. And I'm forgetting the very last chapter. The dignity of the person, of the dignity of the human person. So this, in your conception of this, is the idea now is if I have met the beloved, if I have been kind of, as you said, want to love what the beloved loves, and I do then come to love the church, and I do then come to see the church as my mother, given by God, my Father. Now I have to move out, and it strikes me this is very Pope Francis kind of thing, that it has a Pope Francis feel. Move. Don't just sit there. Get out there and share the gospel.
Yes.
Did you have that feeling too?
I think because I'm a mother of 30 years, if you will, that's the natural pedagogy. like once you train up your children, then you want them to go and do likewise. And that's really just the way Jesus taught, love and then be loved, and then go love one another as I have loved you. Again, in imitation of the Lord himself. And I talk about, this idea of loving one another. It's not just a bumper sticker.
Right.
Like this is a real call in our life. And I talk about it, specifically in that chapter, I really focus in on love of enemies. And the reason I do that is because it's easy for us to talk about loving the people who already love us. It's easy for me to talk to you about my husband, Bob. It's easy for you to hear stories about my children, or maybe these wonderful, joy-filled Christians who are my friends, early on in my life with the church, because they love me back. The real, grist, or where the rubber meets the road, is how we treat the people who really don't like us or don't love us back, and or the people who might be enemies. And I tell the extraordinary story of John Paul II, Saint John Paul II now, and how the witness of his life really. A lot of stories from his life really shaped my own ideas. When he went to the prison to forgive his would-be assassin, that floored me. I mean, we all, those of us who are old enough to remember the assassination attempt on Pope John Paul's life, in St. Peter's Square. And the gunman was apprehended, and he was, tried and convicted and, in prison. And John Paul went later on, after he had recovered from his wounds properly, went and forgave this man. And there were, there's photo accounts and journalistic accounts to that talk about that. I mean, it was like, the eyes of the world could look at that. It's like, how do you forgive somebody who tried to kill you in cold blood? And I think this man, perhaps at first was incredulous, like, hey, I was a good marksman. I know how good a shot I was. I can't believe that you didn't die. And I'm paraphrasing John Paul, but he basically commends his life, the preservation of his life to the Blessed Mother. And again, in paraphrase, but I have it more specifically described in the book, where, one hand pulled the trigger, but another hand guided the bullet. And, even though he forgives this man, I don't know if he felt his forgiveness right off, but he maintained a relationship with this man and went so far as to ask, the president of Italy to pardon him. And eventually the man was pardoned for his crime. Fantastic, this idea of loving our enemies, And I tell another story that's part of, a sermon in from the 5th century from St. Fulgentius, who's making a commentary on the stoning of Stephen. Stephen from the Acts of the Apostles. He's under persecution for being a Christian, and so people are throwing rocks at him to stone him, to kill him. And who's standing there? Who's witnessing this? Who are they leaving their jackets with while this is happening? Saul of Tarsus, who we later know as Paul. And as Stephen is given up the ghost, as he's getting ready to die, he is praying for all of his persecutors in that moment. Again, in imitation of Jesus, who Right. prayed for his persecutors when he was on the cross. And his love for his enemies to his dying breath, I'm sure, had an impact on Saul, who later had his own encounter with Jesus and conversion. And the thing that's powerful about St. Fulgentius' sermon is he says, these two men, Stephen and Paul, St. Paul, are side by side in heaven.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
right,
as friends
right.
of the same Jesus. One guy was throwing rocks at the other guys, you know, to create the martyrdom.
Right, right.
And then he goes on to be, you know, a great evangelist and a great saint. And who's there in heaven cheering him on? Stephen. It was Stephen's prayers for Paul at his death. So now these two men are side by side, companions in heaven, worshiping the same Lord. I mean, those kinds of stories just changed my whole idea about loving one another. It's yep, easy for yep. me to love in the natural the people who already love me.
But if I may,
it's the people who don't.
Right. But if I may ask, the other side of the, like, you point to the sex abuse scandals and horrors as
yes.
really damaging the confidence of people and kind of showing who was all in and who was. I don't mean that. It sounds more negative than I mean it. But kind of if you weren't all in, it could really very easily move you out the door of the church. And reasonably
yes.
so, I suppose.
Mm-hmm,
but
yes.
But there's another kind of undermining of confidence I want to ask you about before we're done today. And that is
sure.
that when you talk to young people about be all in as a Catholic – because of the sexual revolution and the revolution in morals in our society, Catholic moral teaching doesn't look like what the world teaches as good anymore. So that, for example, we'll hear from young people very often who will say, well, I would be, except the Catholic Church, you know, is anti-gay because it's so opposed to gay marriage, for example. And that mm-hmm. that undermining of confidence, like that's a reason not to be all in. People will reserve themselves from fully committing to the Catholic Church because they embrace a moral teaching that is different from what the Catholic Church teaches. Any thoughts on that?
Well, other than the call for us to love is even greater, wouldn't you say? I mean, the people who might be disagreeing with us, how is the spirit in which we're disagreeing with them? How do we disagree? How do we love those persons who see the world differently or through a different lens? You know, it's very hard to maintain composure and to not be polarizing when we're having these conversations. But I think in the context of Christianity is one of the only ways we can have these conversations. Because, you know, if we're just using a political lens, we're not doing each other a favor. We have to really continue to use the lens of love. And I think this is why this love one another chapter is so, so important, you know. And yeah. A lot of times I try not to arm wrestle too much over doctrine until I understand that somebody is committed to Christ. Because, you know, the Lord does a lot of healing in people's minds and hearts. And I've seen a lot of growth. That's why I started talking earlier about this idea of ongoing conversion. You know, there's a lot of conversion that has to happen before, you know, you start to look at all the doctrines and you say, this is where it lines up. And this is what the doctrine calls me to. It's calling me to conform my life to the shape of grace, to the shape of Christ. I wouldn't ask a 15-year-old, you know, to do something, you know, that a 2-year-old does. You know, you go with the pedagogy of where the person is.
Yeah.
You know, if the person is right now, you know, very antithetical to the church, and I'm just speaking person to person here, you know, it's one thing to be able to talk about doctrine and things when you're in a catechetical environment where people want to learn. But it's another thing when you're just talking one-to-one. And that's where I tell people it's important that you know your own story and your own story of your own conversion, because then you can give your witness to why you believe what Jesus says is true. And when you give your own story, nobody can refute that. You might have arguments over doctrine or a scriptural quote or something like that, but nobody can refute your own experience. So it's really important that as we grow as Christians, that we're willing to share our personal relationship with Christ and how we have come to accept his teachings as true with other people.
All In, Why Belonging to the Catholic Church Matters is Pat Gohn's latest book. She also wrote Blessed, Beautiful, and Bodacious, which is as entertaining as the title suggests. You can find her at Pat Gohn, and Gohn is G-O-H-N, so patgohn.net, or you can get her podcast where I guess you said there's up to 200 of these podcasts archived there, amongwomenpodcast.com, amongwomenpodcast.com. Am I right about that? About 200?
That's correct. Thank you, Si.
Pat Gohn, thank you so much. Thank you for the book, and thank you for helping us to be a little bit more all in. And maybe for some of us, the move will be to be a lot more all in. Really appreciate your time with us today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you again.
All In, Why Belonging to the Catholic Church Matters is the name of the book. This has been Catholic Answers Focus. We do this every week. So thank you so much to our listeners. We'll see you again next time on Catholic Answers Focus.